Feeling lost and alone? Looking for validation from your partner, only to find the feeling of rejection and continued frustration? You're together yet so far apart. Now your frustration has turned into disdain and resentment. Your insecurities have begun to affect every aspect of your life. Ironically, you have now become the cold and detached one, shielding yourself from the uncertainties of your relationships. Dr. April Brown has created Bringing Intimacy Back, a series of discussions that are designed to help you reclaim what you have lost along the way. Dr. April will help you rediscover and reconnect to the intimate relationship your heart so desires. Go to www.bringingintimacyback.com today and let the healing begin.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we aim to help you increase the intimate connections between your significant other, family, friends, business network, higher power. We give you the secret power to intimacy, to create a life you love, or love the life you create. Well, on today's show, we're talking about something very, very important that is dear to my heart. We're talking about Black Lives Matter and mental health, a call for healing, advocacy, allies, and social justice. You may say, well, what does this really have to do with intimacy? And really, it has everything to do with intimacy. And our culture is really important about us learning how to have connections. And every time that I talk about intimacy, I'm really talking about those deep, deep connections, how we connect with one another. And so today, I was just doing some research and stuff, and actually, in all honesty, I think I was doing research, but also one of my former interns turned me on this wonderful lady here. Her name is Dr. Letitia Brown James. She has some wonderful podcasts or shows about the Black Lives Movement, and so I was so touched by what she had to say, and so I wanted to have her on. Welcome, Dr. Letitia Brown James.
Thank you, Dr. April. Thank you for having me.
Yes, yes. Well, let me tell you a little bit about this wonderful lady. She is, of course, a licensed mental health counselor, a board certified counselor, a qualified supervisor, a Florida behavior case manager supervisor. She has over 10 years of experience. She's in the Orlando area, working with adults, children, families, couples in many different settings as a counselor and an administrator. She's also a counselor educator, which means she teaches and she's supervised. She's a core faculty member at Adler Graduate School right there in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where a lot of some of this started. Adjunct faculty at Stetson University in DeLand, Florida. And of course, because of all of her experience, she's a sought-out speaker consultant for issues ranging from mental health, anxiety, multiculturalism, clinical and administrative supervision, social justice, ethical practicing. Of course, one of her specialties is human trafficking and the intersection, of course, between mental and physical health and many other topics. She's also has so many credentials in the sense of that she not only counsels people, but she also is a leader in the counseling field. She is the president of the Florida Counseling Association, treasurer of the Association for Multicultural Counseling and Development, past president of the Florida Association for Multi-Counseling and Development. She's also a member of the NBC, American Counseling Association, Florida Counseling Association, and a variety of things. She has received tons of awards. And just last year, she was the National Board for Certified Counselors Excellence in Clinical Mental Health, the Black Women Handling Business Women in Medicine Award from Bethune-Cookman University. And of course, she's beautiful. And so she's 40 under 40, an outstanding alumni award, and she's received a lot. Please look her up because she is a groundbreaking counselor. Welcome, doctor. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. So before we get started with everything, I truly want to know, with everything that's happened in the last few months, how are you dealing with all of this?
Oh, wow. That's a very difficult question to answer. For right now, and it's just been moment by moment, I'm okay. In this moment, I'm okay. It's been an emotion of a variety of emotion, an emotional roller coaster. I'm sorry, just a variety of emotions related to everything that's been going on. So just taking it day by day and trying to engage in a lot of self-care to keep myself grounded and balanced, because the work that I do can be very stressful and overwhelming. And particularly in today's climate, it makes it even more difficult, because not only am I a Black woman, you know, living this reality that we're dealing with currently, but we have COVID going on, and I have my students and supervisees and just all of these things and people and moving parts to it that can also make it pretty overwhelming if I don't be intentional about staying grounded and taking care of myself.
Right. And that is very informative for our listeners out there, that we really do have to stay in the present moment, like you said. Stay grounded. Yes. So I read all this stuff about you, but I don't even know myself. How did you even get into this field of counseling?
I love that question. You know, I've always known for a really long time. You know, as a kid, we have these ideas and dreams about what we're going to be when I grow up. So I think the first thing I started out thinking, or the first profession that I thought about, was becoming a teacher. And then it went to nursing. And this was like 5, 6, when we start thinking about careers. And it wasn't until about age 12 that I became pretty solid. I want to be a counselor. And I didn't really know, I didn't say counselor, I said a psychologist. I didn't know what that really meant at the time, but I just knew that I liked the idea of helping people through their daily struggles and their emotions and so forth. And so I went on to Bethune-Cookman. As you mentioned, last year I was selected as one of the 40 under 40 recipients. And yes, I went on to Bethune-Cookman, and I majored in psychology, and that was my major all the way through until I graduated in 4 years. And I was pretty much on the path to becoming a psychologist, again, just wanting to be in the field, and went out and started working primarily in the foster care system with children that were abused and neglected and were living in a long-term foster care facility and shelters and so forth. And I did that for about 2 years and just really love working with children and adolescents as they navigated that, you know, coping with their traumas and the depression and the behavioral issues and different things that they experienced. And so I did that for 2 years, and I started looking into graduate school because I'm like, I need to continue this path. And I was pretty torn at first between psychology and counseling. And I settled for counseling mainly because that program had the marriage and family therapy track that I liked. And so I ended up going the counseling route. So here I am.
Okay, wonderful. Yes. And so as a fellow counselor, many people think we just counsel, which is one of the things we do. But also in our field, we are supposed to serve as roles of social justice.
Yes.
Can you explain to our audience what that means, and what specifically does that mean to you? Because that's something that you really do specialize in your practice.
In social justice?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I think to break that down a little bit, sometimes I find that people think that social justice and advocacy are the same things. And so it's important to differentiate that. No, you know, social justice is the larger part of dealing with helping individuals, or not just individuals, but just people in general, groups of people on a macro level, if you will, making change, policy changes, things to improve their well-being and having equity and equality and different things like that. And advocacy are the steps that we can take to get to creating social justice change. And I think it's such a great question right now in the current climate that we're living in, because we are really dealing with a major social justice movement right now. You know, it's being referred to as the biggest civil rights movement, which, you know, you can say it is a part of social justice for sure. So it's really interesting to be a part of a modern social justice / civil rights movement currently.
Right, definitely. And I just want to say up to our listeners who are listening, if you want to call in and have questions, please call 1-888-627-6008. And as you said, we're in this civil rights movement called Black Lives Matter. What exactly does that mean?
Black Lives Matter specifically?
Yes.
Black Lives Matter really stands for Black lives needing to have equity, equality, like I mentioned earlier when we were talking about social justice, and that we, as a country, we have a really dark history, and unfortunately, it still permeates in today's society. There are a lot of things that have changed, but we have a lot of work to do. For example, you know, we're not enslaving people anymore as a country, or at least not outwardly. And then, of course, I can't help but mention things like human trafficking, which is another one of my areas that is a that is referred to as a modern form of slavery. But I'm talking about the slavery of Black people and, you know, different groups of people that were enslaved during, you know, the pre-civil rights movement for so many years. And so we are now, you know, that's not legal anymore, but there are different things that are occurring, such as implicit bias. And we see people getting targeted by police officers or in the workplace when they go to the grocery stores just because of the color of their skin. And although a variety of people from different marginalized groups, specifically racial groups, are the targets of hate, discrimination, oppression, and all of those things. Right now, there is a spotlight on Black lives because Black lives are under attack specifically right now. And unfortunately, it took a lot of media coverage and the current issue, primarily stemming from the George Floyd's murder and then others after it. There were many before it, but it's really bringing a national conversation, or even a global conversation, really, not just national, of what do we need to do to change this. So it's really important for people to understand that no one is saying that Black lives are more important than any other lives. That's not the purpose of the movement. The purpose of the movement is to create awareness, equity, and fairness for Black lives that are under attack. You know, even myself, as a Black woman who have never been in any type of legal trouble, I still have to deal with things like people asking me or questioning me, questioning my status, questioning, do I belong here? Whether it's in a grocery store or in a professional role, people doubting that I am the professional that I am, which you can say it's because of a number of things. Some people will say, well, oh, maybe it's because you're young and you're so young to be accomplished. But the reality is the things that I face and many other Black people face, we don't get asked, people don't get asked those questions who are not Black.
Right. Right. And so as what you're saying, because people assume that because you're educated, that discrimination does not happen.
Yes, yes. Or like you got into school, if you went off to college or you went to a trade school or whatever because of, you were pretty much a minority token or because of affirmative action, not because of your intellect. Like you couldn't possibly be smart enough to go there. And as we talk about the current movement, we can't help but talk about politics. Black Lives Matter. And I encourage people to actually look up the actual organization of Black Lives so that they can see the mission and that it's not even just about Black lives. It's about anyone that is being oppressed and marginalized, whether they are from a sexual minority group, you know, someone that might be gay or someone who is a transgender person, and just having a fair chance and not being treated differently because your value system says that this person shouldn't be who they are. So it's not even just about Black lives. It's about equality and equity for all people, but primarily focusing on individuals from minority groups, not just racial minorities. And some people fall into many minority categories. You know, whether you're a woman of color or you're a woman who identify as a lesbian, or you're a woman who is a Muslim or a man, you know, all of these things that can put us in various marginalized categories, which we refer to in the field as intersectionality. So meaning the parts of our identities that can cause us to experience some oppressive, hateful, and mean things in the world.
Right, definitely. And how has the Black Lives Movement for you, how has it affected you?
Well, from a positive perspective, it has affected me positively because it has brought a conversation, like I mentioned earlier, to national and global stages that we need to have. You know, it's kind of like hear no evil, see no evil. If it's not affecting you, you don't talk about it or you keep it in your house. And we can get into all of the cultural implications with that and looking at privilege, specifically things like white privilege, which can be very triggering topic for people because they feel like, well, yes, I'm white, but I grew up poor, so I had a hard life. But we're not talking about that. The difference we're talking about when we talk about Black lives is that you and I may come from the similar backgrounds, but be of different races and have very diverse experiences solely because of the color of our skin. You could go into a store and not necessarily be suspected as being a thief, or not being suspected as stealing a credit card because you have an American Express card or you have a Black card or whatever. But me as a Black woman, it's definitely more likely to happen to me. And it has. And it has happened to a lot of other Black people like me. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about Black lives and just owning your privilege, whatever your privilege is, owning it, whether it's racial privilege, economic privilege, and using it, acknowledging it, but using it for the greater good, using it to engage in advocacy efforts, like we talked about earlier a little bit, to promote social justice. You know, I have so many wonderful friends and colleagues of different races, and we've had multiple conversations over the years, but specifically more now. Like, Leticia, how can I get involved? How can I be a part of this movement? Or how can I have these conversations with my white colleagues or my white family members that they don't understand, and they're listening to what they're hearing other people say, including the president of the United States, you know, referring to the Black Lives Matter movement as a terrorist group. It has nothing to do with terrorism. And it just takes a very quick Google search to find that out. I was having a conversation with a woman on social media recently, and I encouraged her to do that. I said, I encourage you to go and look at the mission of the organization. And she said, well, website, people can put whatever they want on websites. Yes, that's true. But just going that extra step to finding out about the organization, finding about the owners of the organization or the founders of the organization, and hearing from them directly what Black Lives Matter is about. Now, of course, you're always going to have extremists, but you have extremist Christians, if you want to go from that perspective, you know, that will do evil things in the name of God, for example. So we're not looking at the extremists. We're looking at the actual founders and mission of the organization and not lumping it into a negative category because there are outliers that are doing things in the name of that organization.
Mm-hmm. And when you just mentioned privilege, white privilege, many people sometimes don't understand exactly what that is, even in the sense of privilege. They feel like, well, I didn't have that. Or they're feeling so guilty about it. I've seen it other sides where I had someone who just like, I'm so upset about it, and they felt so guilty about it. And it's not, yeah. And what we're saying, it's not that it's bad, but own it.
Yes, own it. Own it and recognize that you have it. Right. And how can you use it? If you are concerned about creating an equal and equitable world for everyone, how can you use your privilege? We all have some level of privilege, you know, whether it's the privilege of being an American citizen or you have economic privilege. So we're not saying that having white privilege is bad. It's one of those privileges that you were born into at no fault of your own. But now that you're aware of it, how can you use it to become an ally, you know, to help create conversations? And one of the things that I've been focusing on as I talk about allyship, and not just for Black lives, just being an ally in general, for any group or organization that may be under attack, is being okay with the fact that you too may become under attack for individuals that have biases against those groups. For example, you know, I had a conversation with a friend recently that is a white person, and they talked about having conversations with other white people that they've known and respected for a really long time. And they were pretty much told, you need to choose. You need to choose if you are going to support this and abandon the white race, or if you are going to come back and just be a white person and not let the issues that these people are saying that they're saying is happening to them is not really happening to them. And that was really sad for me. So what is the cost of your allyship? You know, you may have those experiences. And I've had several conversations with individuals in similar situations. And I just encouraged them. I said, I'm not telling you what to do. I would never do that. But I do encourage you to just take an inventory of the people in your circle and see if they are people you even want in your circle anymore, if they could be so hateful. You know, we all come to a point in our lives where we have to let go of some relationships for various right. reasons, not just romantic relationships, but when our values and our vision, you know, just don't align anymore, for whatever reason, we have to part ways, or can you put some distance? Can you have conversations where it might be uncomfortable for you to have those conversations with people? It might be frustrating, but they are necessary. If you're really going to be an ally, these things are necessary. All of us can be allies in some way, shape, or form by using our privilege to help people that don't share that same privilege. You know, for example, right. one of my privileges is heterosexual privilege. And how do I use that to be an ally for people who don't have it? Another one is economic privilege. How can I use my economic privilege to be a voice for people who don't have it, that may be living in poverty? You know, right now, a lot of people are finding themselves more than usual in that situation because of COVID. So how can I use my voice and use my platform to help advocate for those individuals? And it doesn't always have to be a big thing like writing a letter or calling your legislator, which I definitely support, but it could be something as simple as just learning more. How can you get involved? Just listening, signing a petition, you know, small things that you can do to become an ally and an advocate that can lead to social change, social justice. Yeah.
Definitely. Thank you so much. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I like how you put, why should we be concerned? And how you put it out is we need to be concerned because you never know if you're going to be on under attack. So yes. we need to help others just like people help us. And when we come back, we're going to talk more specifically about how this works in the culture that we have right now. We'll take a short break and we'll be back in a few moments.
During this difficult time that we are all facing, many people are in need of someone to talk to. One option is speaking to a therapist to express your anxieties if you are feeling isolated or just need someone that will listen and help you with coping skills to get through. Dr. April Brown is now accepting new clients and is working with her existing clients through distance video counseling. The services are through a secure online HIPAA web-based practice management platform called Simple Practice. This technology can provide a secure two-way interactive video counseling session over the internet. For more information about video counseling, please email Dr. April Brown at info@draprilbrown.com or you may call 239-565-6921. Thank you. And remember, we are all in this together.
Okay, welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Show, where intimacy is real. Today, we're talking about Black Lives Matter and mental health, a call for healing, advocacy, allies, and social justice. And our guest today is Dr. Letitia Brown James. We were just talking about the importance of Black Lives Matter and why we should be concerned, all of us, because we never know if it may be one of us being attacked. So as we talk about how to get more involved, how do you think this has really started to affect our mental health and people of color and how even the mental health of people of non-color or people of white backgrounds? How has this truly affected us from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, it has affected Black people in a very significant way, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, because although the things that are happening that's in the media right now about how Black lives are under attack, and mainly in the media right now, it's about police brutality in that format, but it's happening on many levels, you know, in the healthcare system, people not yeah. receiving adequate health care because of who they are, or for some people, their economic status, or even the individuals that are Black, who are Black, that are on the professional side, you know, I do some work in on the medical side of things, and I have a lot of colleagues who are working in the medical profession, and they share their experiences of having patients, you know, say to them, "You can't take care of me. I need a different doctor because of their race." You know, so it's happening. It happens all the time. So on one hand, it's kind of like, I guess you can call it digging in the scab of a wound mm-hmm. that's already there for a lot of us. And it creates a lot of anxiety, a lot of anger, depression, hypervigilance, because there is this angst about, am I next? Or is someone mm-hmm. that I know next? If you talk to any Black parent, you know, they will tell you, and of course, I'm not speaking on behalf of people who are Black, but just from my experience, they will tell you that they have to have the talk with their children. And the talk just entails, what do you do if you get stopped by a police officer? Or when you go to school, you need to act a certain way. You need to do your very best. You have to work twice as hard in order for people to take you seriously. So it has affected Black lives in that way, you know, of really, again, digging the scab of a wound that's trying to heal, or maybe it's not healing at all. But on the positive side, it has really brought a lot of awareness that people who are not Black, and not just people who are white, just non-Black people, have more of an awareness now that, whoa, this is really a problem. Of course, you still have people that are denying that it's happening and think that we are exaggerating. And, you know, that's an isolated incident, or if they had just complied, that would have never happened. All of these things that people say. But you know what, from my perspective, it's bigger than just compliance or non-compliance. It's about humanity and treating people as human beings. You know, whether someone complies or not, when they're stopped by a police officer, and whether the stop is justified, because a lot of times it's not even a justified stop. You know, it's completely based on implicit bias. It's based on racism. It has happened to me. It has happened to my spouse. Mm-hmm. It has happened to many people who I know. And so whether it's warranted or not, just treating people with dignity and fairness, and understanding that I saw a video not too long ago with a Black youth that was stopped by white officers, and he was, and I guess because I'm a counselor, it's very easy for me to see. I could see the terror in his face, and mm-hmm. he ran away. So sometimes you'll have people have that fight or flight response, you know, to things. Some people are able to kind of stay and fight, if you will, stay calm, deal with whatever, you know, answer the questions respectfully. And even when they do that, sometimes they're still mistreated and killed and lied on. But even if someone runs away or they're not quote unquote complying, it doesn't mean that, it definitely doesn't mean that they should be mistreated or killed in any way, but it also doesn't mean that they're trying to be disobedient. Understanding that the plight of Black lives and how we're treated overall can cause people to be extra sensitive, or, you know, feel afraid and trying to run away really for their lives, because there's a real fear there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say even with this movement that there's still people, and all of us are still sometimes even afraid to even still speak out.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And I've even seen it in talking with a police officer where they are even afraid to, and it's a Black police officer, say how they feel about the situation.
Right, right.
Yeah, right, because for decades we've been told we couldn't say anything, couldn't do anything, and now the gates are open, but still, it's a lot of fear going on.
Yes, yes. And understanding the multi-generational traumas that have experienced, the residuals of slavery. You know, people will say, well, slavery has ended. Well, it has, if you want to be politically correct, or, you know, it has, but there are still what I call residuals of slavery, where, for example, mm-hmm. within the Black community and other minority communities, there is this code of, you keep things in the house. If you're a person of faith, you take it to God in prayer. If you're a believer, and a lot of that came from slavery, because they didn't have a choice back then.
Right.
You could not speak out, because speaking out could literally cost you to be hung, or, you know, go to jail or whatever. Yeah, your family, absolutely. Your house could be burned down and lose your job. All of these things. So unfortunately, there is still a lot of generational trauma and messages that have been passed mm-hmm. down through the generations of keeping things inside, and it's not helping us. It's not helping us on a micro level, nor is it helping us on a macro level. So like one of the things that I do as a Black mental health professional is try to reduce stigma as much as possible for people within the Black community, Black and Brown right. communities. And even within counseling, I've seen it time and time again, working in community mental health, where a white colleague mostly will say things like, well, the client is resistant, or the client is this and the client is that, and not understanding that the lack of trust has nothing to do with resistance, but it has to do with my lived experience of being hurt and violated by people who look like you. So I need a little bit more compassion and patience as you work with me to help me to feel safe trusting you with my issues before I will open up to you.
Right. And definitely, even for people who are non-counselors, that is something that everybody can do, is to help other people talk about what's going on, you know. And there's a lot of different type families these days. And I don't know if you've seen it in your office now, but there's a lot of different type of families. So everyone's trying to figure out how to talk about race.
Yes.
How to talk about what's going on. And it needs to talk about it. It needs to be discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, it certainly does. And no matter how old the individuals are, there needs to be a conversation. Of course, that's developmentally and age appropriate, but there needs to be a conversation. We need to get away from saying, I don't see color, because we think that's the politically correct thing to do, or that's the nice thing to do. But the reality is, we do see color. We see colors everywhere, unless you're colorblind.
You know? Yes,
we all see color.
You explain that, because people do say, I don't see color. I don't see color. So can you explain what that colorblind means?
It's not helpful. It's not helpful in any way, shape, or form. Because again, the reality is, color often defines a person's experience, lived experience.
Part of their identity.
Part of their identity. And we're talking about Black lives today, but specifically within the Black community, there is a pride with being Black, again, that goes all the way back to how we were treated from the very beginning of time, of being proud of who we are, proud of how we look, how our hair grows out of our scalp, which can also create some issues in schools and at jobs where people are referring to our hair texture as unprofessional from the way that it grows out of our scalps, you know, and as a person that may not have that type of hair, that may have straight hair or curly hair or whatever, you can go to work and never, or to school and never have to deal with that. You know, some of my research, I do a lot of work on racial microaggression, specifically within the Black community. And the research is heartbreaking. Yes, I certainly will. Yeah, racial microaggressions are the things that people say and do to a person because of their race. So as we're talking about Black people, I'm sure just about every Black person or a lot of us could say we have had these experiences where someone will say to you like, oh, you're so smart, or you speak very well, or, you know, things like that. That's a microaggression. It's wrapped up in the form of quote unquote a compliment, but it's an insult, because it's insinuating that you were not expecting me to be articulate or to be smart or to not have a criminal record. I had a guy say to me once, and I flat out called him racist. I said, you know, your comment is very racist. We were talking about something, and he said to me, of course, he went on the defense, and he said, you calling me racist is like me saying that you have five children with five different dads and no education. And even in that, I said, and even in that, your rebuttal to me, that's racist. Because why would you assume? I said, because you know what? None of those things apply to me. I actually have a PhD. I have one husband and not five baby daddies.
I think, and since you brought the word racism up, can you explain, because some people have this concept of what racism is, but it's not. So can you explain exactly what that word means?
To me, how I would define it in layman's terms is, you have certain biases and opinions about a person solely based on their race. Whether you think that they may have a criminal record, or they're a thief, or they're a murderer, whatever, just solely because of their race. And you don't want to see people have relationships, intimate relationships, romantic relationships with people from a different race. I can't tell you how many clients I've seen that are, you know, they're dating, or they're wanting to date, or they're married, they have an interracial relationship, and their family members are so awful to them about it, saying that they're disappointed in them because they married that person, and that person meaning solely because of the race of the person, or they're shunning their children because they might be, you know, they might be Black, or, you know, they're biracial, multiracial, or whatever. That's racism to me.
Right.
And,
A dimension of power. There's a dimension of power that's involved in that word racism.
Yes. And thinking that there's some type of hierarchy based on race, that one person is better than the other solely because of race, you know, and I think people have a misconception that racism is you're out there, like you're part of the Ku Klux Klan, and you're overtly hanging people and killing people. Of course, that is definitely involved in racism, but racism can be very subtle, you know, in the form of a microaggression where, you know, you're walking and you see a person of a different race approaching you, and you start clutching your purse, or there's an assumption that they did something wrong, you know, because of the bias that you have. It's all tied into racism.
Right. And it exists today, and people don't realize that it still exists.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of people are not honest about their racist beliefs and thoughts and feelings surrounding this issue.
Right. Right. In fact, last year when I moved into a new, well, I was trying to move into a new place. Once they found I was a Black counselor, they told me they couldn't do business. They couldn't rent to me or my clients. So it happens in a variety of facts. Yes. Yes. So yeah. Where I want to go now is, like you said, on a worldwide level, but also on a personal level, these things happen. And for people of color, for some of us, it's getting flooded back into us that we remember all these times we've been discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What are you telling your clients who are dealing with some of that?
I validate and normalize their experiences because that is real for them. Their experiences are very real. And even as we talk about mental health, you know, it's really important to, as counselors, to think about how issues with racism could factor into a person's presenting problem. Those of us who are counselors, we know that, let's say 95% of the time, when people come in to see us and they say they're coming in for this particular thing, as you work and you talk with them, you find out that it's way deeper than that. That's not even the real issue. So it's really important to consider, especially in this climate, how when people of color come to counseling and they're describing their feelings of depression or anxiety, or they're angry and they don't know how to place it, because sometimes that'll happen. You know, it's up to us to help to dig a little deeper to find out. And I tell my students and my supervisees, address the elephant in the room from day one.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what the elephant is. The elephant could be, there could be a huge age difference, or it could be race, or whatever it is. Address the elephant in the room, you know, and you know, of course you would do it very delicately and saying something like, I'm just wondering, you know, what it's like for you working with someone who looks like me, or, you know, just however you want to frame it, being your authentic self. And in my experience, people really appreciate that. If it's not an issue, they'll tell you. If it is an issue, they will be very relieved that you have opened the door to have that conversation, and will automatically let their guard down, at least somewhat, and be willing to, dive a little bit deeper into that conversation with you.
Yeah, definitely. And I know I had to do that a lot when I first got started, because my face wasn't everywhere. You had to explain everything, and but I'm glad that you mentioned that. And it's really important for anyone, if they're facing that kind of stuff, to get help.
Yes.
And to speak up, to speak out about it. And so we're going to take a short break here. And in this break here, we're going to have some information about actually what does Dr. Letitia Brown-James do. So we're going to take a little short commercial. And then when we come back, we're going to talk more about tools and tips that we can do to become allies and engage in social justice.
Hello, my name is Dr. Letitia Brown-James, and I am a licensed mental health and board certified counselor in the state of Florida. I am also the founder and owner of Victorious Living Counseling and Consulting, LLC, where we offer counseling services to children, adolescents, families, couples, and groups. We offer licensure supervision to counselors seeking licensure in the state of Florida for mental health and or marriage and family therapy. Finally, we offer a myriad of training and consultation services to individuals and organizations that may be seeking some guidance on issues surrounding leadership, multicultural and social justice issues, mental health issues, and a variety of other topics. So if you would like to learn more, please give us a call at 321-209-8219. You can email me directly at drlbj@letitiabrownjames.com. You can visit my website at drletitiabrownjames.com or check out our Facebook page at Victorious Living Counseling and Consulting LLC. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And everyone, make sure you check her out, definitely. So in this third part here, I want to talk about tools. So what tools can, first thing, people deal with and in the Black Lives Movement, how to make it, how to become allies. If you're facing with discrimination, what can you do? How to engage in social justice?
Yes, well, let's address the ally part. First, having conversations with the people in your circle. And if you have, you know, attending podcasts and presentations and things just to learn from the people that are actually experiencing these things, why it's important to them, what their experiences have been, and really being authentic and true to yourself and sitting with your thoughts and how you may have had some biases in the past or you're still working through them. And if you have connection to people who are Black, you know, reaching out to them and asking them, you know, some questions if they're willing, but also not being offended if they don't want to talk about it. Because right now we are hurting. We are very overwhelmed. We are inundated with a bunch of things, you know, emotions and situations because of this issue. So educate, take some time to educate yourself, get involved in anti-racism efforts and just finding a way for you to get involved, again, based on what you have access to. No one is expecting you to, or at least I'm not expecting people to do things that is not practical for them. You know, do things that are practical of getting involved, attend a Black Lives Matter protest. You know, of course, stay safe while you're out there. And doing some research, like I mentioned at the very beginning, even just going to the website and learning exactly what the actual movement is about. Again, where we're not talking about the outliers and the people that are doing wrong things in the name of the movement, but really understanding what the movement is about and, you know, finding your voice and your space to be helpful in the situation.
Yes. And so I want to go back to your first tip about having conversations, which is, I'm a believer that it starts small, having the conversation, yes. And then it grows. And I'm glad that you could ask questions, because if you don't know something, it's good to go ahead and ask. And if as you're trying to learn to ask. However, you also put that it's good to respect boundaries. So, yes. You know, if you're a white person, you're like, I really don't even know how does this affect Black people? And you try to go to your Black friend and you want to ask questions and then your Black friend doesn't really respond back or understand that person may be hurting.
Yes. Sometimes, you know, there's the whole not today. I'm not with it today. I can't deal with this today. Today I'm in a dark place or a bad place emotionally, so I can't talk about it. And the thing to understand is that for Black people, this is constantly at the forefront of our minds. You know, again, we're afraid for ourselves, we're afraid for our lives when we go out. And so, you know, I've heard many, many friends and colleagues say things like, I am very hurt by this. And I believe that they are, they really right. are. And, you know, but for them to have this awareness and have the initial shock of what is really going on is a lot for them. Well, just imagine living that reality every single day and how taxing and overwhelming that can be for the population that's experiencing it.
Right, definitely. And so the other thing is maybe finding, and this has happened to me where I've had Caucasian clients come to me to understand about Black Lives Matter because they've talked with their friends, but they haven't got that much information or whatever. And so even if you can't find one person, finding another person, or listening to podcasts.
Yeah, doing your own research, because you don't want to put the burden on the population that's being victimized to always explain things. Again, that can be very exhausting, and quite frankly, it can be perceived as lazy or a cop out. You can do your own research. We can, for those of us who have access to technology or who use technology, and I say that because I recognize that not everyone is able to do that, but if you do, it takes a quick Google search, you know, to find out some information on your own. So do your own work as well as trying to connect with people. Because I think sometimes people feel like, well, this, because it hasn't happened to anyone that they actually know, it's easier to dismiss it or think, well, no, you know, that happened a long time ago, or that's not still happening. But having conversations with people that it's actually still happening to on a daily basis, you know, the fact that as a wife, you get a phone call from your spouse, from your husband, saying that he was just racially profiled because he fit the description of someone that was breaking into a business, mm-hmm. when the business that he was allegedly breaking into, he owned. You know, that actually happened to my husband, you know, and there weren't any questions asked. It was guns drawn, you know, calls for backup, guns drawn on the ground, guns out. I don't believe you. This is not your business. You fit the description of someone that's breaking into this business. It was obviously a lie because he owned the business. You know what I mean? Right. So these are constant things that we have to deal with on a regular basis, and it is exhausting, mm-hmm. you know? So we may not want to talk about it mm-hmm. every single time it's brought up. But again, in my experience, most people are willing to at least engage in conversations, because that's how we help to heal ourselves. And it's also how we help to educate and create this global movement of making change on a macro level, you know, engaging in that social justice work to lead to lasting changes.
Right. And you just mentioned a great point, is that's how we heal.
Yes.
So Black people having these conversations with non-Black people, it really does help us heal, but also educate.
Yes. I participated in a peer support conversation yesterday with some individuals, and I was asked to help with it. But anyway, they did it was a program. So they had a comedian, they had people that were doing poems or spoken word, and it was related to the Black experience. And it was so powerful to hear, especially the poet, talk about her pain of being a Black woman, you know, by engaging in poetry, or you'll hear it in the music. And if we could talk about music for a second, sometimes, you know, people will say, well, rap music is so violent, for an example. But if you really listen to a lot of it, it's people talking about their pain, you know, and that happens in all genres of music. Usually when people are really good as a musician or as a singer, they are, and they'll tell you that they have to channel their pain. Or even as a movie star, you know, they'll tell you, I had to really challenge my pain or go back to a painful time in my life when I had a bad breakup to really get in the role of the character that I was playing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of our pain has been because of police brutality and for the young people out there. Yes, definitely. And so, and you also talked about attending protests in the sense of being an ally and engaging in social justice and writing your comment and stuff. It's also another technique that you mentioned earlier.
Yes. And you know, those can be intimidating things, but try go in groups or try to join an organization like Black Lives. And I hate to sound like I am a spokesperson for them, because I don't work for them in any way, but I just support them, or the NAACP or whatever the organization is. Some people are creating communities within their religious community to go to Tallahassee, if you're in Florida, and advocate for change, police reform, whatever. So joining professional organizations and advocacy organizations that are already working on things to help create change so that it doesn't seem so overwhelming. And we're stronger in numbers too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. The more we join, the better we are. So definitely.
Yeah. That was actually one of the positive things that I did mention earlier when we were talking about this movement and what it means to me. From a positive perspective, it has been really emotionally overwhelming in a positive way to see people of so many backgrounds coming together for this common cause.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so proud of our young people.
Oh my goodness. The young people are really doing it. Yes.
Yes. Yes. How, I have a 25-year-old, but how they're out there protesting, they're talking up, they're hopeful about making changes, which is just, it's remarkable to see that. Yes. And for me being in the generation that I am and having an older generation of my parents in the 60s, and now, this right here, it's overwhelming. And it's,
and it's really interesting to talk to our elders, who grew up pre-civil rights or during that time to hear from their perspective what witnessing this has been like for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because there's been so much discrimination that it's gone through all these years, and now I'm hoping things will change,
Yes,
because for many of us, discrimination has even started when we were little children.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. In school, in kindergarten. And I know tons and tons of Black families that talk about their children having their first experiences on the playground, or even as they, when they go to daycare. I will never forget this example that happened not too long ago, just a few years ago. I was supervising a program for inner city youth, mainly Black youth in that program. But I went on this field trip just to help support and really to observe the staff to make sure that they were doing what they were supposed to do. And they visited a local restaurant, and there were kids playing in the playground, and some of the Black kids, from our group went in to play with the kids, and it blew my mind to see the way that they were treated. Don't touch my child. And, kids are so innocent. They're just playing. Now they truly don't really see color.
Right.
They just see another kid. And the outrage and the hatred that came out from some of those parents as the kids were playing, and there was this assumption that the Black kids were trying to harm their children, it was really sad.
Right.
Definitely. So it starts very early.
Yes. And even in the education system, I worked as a school counselor in a elementary, middle, and high. But even when they start in elementary, many times the system is just wanting to label them.
Oh, yeah. Black children are overwhelmingly represented in the students that are in, ESC classes, or they have the diagnoses of autism and attention deficit disorder, oppositional defiant disorder. They are often misdiagnosed, and their passion, is perceived as violent. They're also more likely to be accused of cheating if they're gifted, and if they do well, there's an assumption, well, you must have cheated, like you could not have done this out of your own intellect. Happens all the time, and I saw it too working in the school system and in my research. It's really sad, but it happens.
Right, and it affects graduation rates. Yeah, and so if you don't graduate, it's a whole cycle.
Yes.
Yes, that I'm so happy that it's been brought to the forefront in 2020 and we're talking about it. And now it's time for action.
Yes.
In the sense of some more action tips, what are some other action tips that we can do? Even in the sense of helping, since we just mentioned children.
Advocating for equity in the school systems. Usually they're, even though our schools are no longer officially or legally segregated, they still are. School choice, and it's just all of these things, in some counties and some states where people can make a choice for their children to go into a better school district. But why does it have to be that way? Why is the level of education, the quality of the education that our students experience should be based on their zip codes, that a parent or parents would have to go out of their way and travel to put their kid in a different school or find a way to pay for private school because the schools that they're living in, in the areas that they're living is not quality. I don't understand. There has to be a way to reduce this gap or actually close the gap generational, yes. Yeah, generational wealth, educational, you know, educational opportunities should be the same across the board. So we cannot, and this is a hard reality for many people to face, we cannot say that this is a country based on freedom and equality when there are signs all over the place that it's not that way.
Right. And so I'm glad that you mentioned that, you know, these are some steps that we can do, because we do need to definitely close the gap that's there. You know, because America should be about equality for all humans.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Equality and equity for all humans. Absolutely.
Right. But I know that that's going to be a challenge. And so how do we keep our hope alive in all of this?
Definitely trying to find the positives in the situation, yeah. You know, making some nice lemonade out of the lemons,
you know? Exactly.
If you will, tapping into whatever it is that makes you feel good, you know, practicing some form of self-care every single day, you know, mm-hmm. staying connected. And again, in this era of COVID, it has to look different, or it should be looking different for most of us, because we're also trying to stay safe, but just finding ways to connect and stay grounded, and again, looking at the positives in every potentially negative situation. There has to be some type of positive hope that we can hold on to. I know for me personally, I'm very hopeful that this current social justice movement will lead to some really needed lasting changes in this country. It's not going to be fixed overnight, but again, just having the conversations on the global scale that is happening, it wasn't happening before. So I think there's going to be some positive changes that will definitely come out of it after this.
Oh, definitely. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Letitia Brown James, for being on the show. You have provided us with so much information. If you anyone out there listening and you want to check her out, go to our website at www.letitiabrownjames.com. And her social media, she's on LinkedIn and Facebook. Now, LinkedIn is Letitia / Brown with an E / James. And Facebook, that's right. And you're on Facebook with Victorious Living Counseling and Consulting. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I think my LinkedIn is just Letitia Brown - James.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there any other social media or any other aspects that people are wanting to reach out to you?
No, those are just the professional ones, but, you know, my okay. email and my website, letitiabrownjames.com, are by far probably the easiest way to learn more and get a hold of me.
Right. Well, you've been a blessing. Please keep in touch. You're always welcome on the show, and thank you so much. This has been the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. Feel free to check us out on our website, and thank you guys so much.
Thank you for having me.